Joining me today is my friend Rocky. We're just going to go by Rocky. He's usually my silver guy, but we're going to be talking about some healthcare horror stories. And I'm just going to give him the floor, especially if you're not an American, this will be hard to understand, because I think a lot of people I talk to in Japan, whether they're Japanese or British or Australian or whatever, they don't really fully grasp how horrible it is to live with the American healthcare system. They've heard it's bad, but let's just talk to an individual from Jersey and just listen to what happens with all the rigmarole from the categories and what happens being sent back and forth between doctors and different types of care and what people have to put up with and how much it costs and how they catch you with the tests and all the unnecessariness, and it ultimately ends up in a lot of bankruptcy and sometimes death. And that's the American healthcare system. So Rocky, I'm just going to give you the floor. Tell us your story about your mother and the care workers and what happened in your case. And also, I had a guest on earlier talking about Medicare for All, single-payer system. What do you think about that as well?
If we had a single-payer Medicare, it'd be the best possible system. But now, with everybody competing, every insurance company out there competing, it's not only the Medicare part isn't bad. It's just the hoops you have to jump through to secure it properly. Mm-hmm. Medicare is only 5% of the budget is used for administrative purposes. The rest goes out. Now, a lot of that goes out to crooks, but that's not Medicare's problem. But there, what we discussed earlier was the waste in the system, the duplication. And that's because of insurance companies, I don't think because of Medicare. But Medicare ends up fitting the bill.
Well, that's what we were saying. You have these publicly traded for-profit insurance companies whose interest is to not give you money and try and make healthy people pay and not to insure sick people. Or if you are sick, they try and find some reason, some technicality to butt you off of insurance.
Right. I had a friend that worked for the city. He runs a bunch of health problems, and he was worked for the street department, and he was guaranteed in his contract when he became disabled that the city would cover his health insurance for 10 years. Now, after he was in about 6 years and had run up over $400,000 in bills, the insurance company writes him a note and saying, because you were eligible for Medicaid and you didn't apply for it, we're only going to pay the 20%, and you owe us the other 80% of the $400,000. So he got a bill for $320,000, not because he was in the wrong, but because the insurance company said you should have applied for Medicaid as soon as you got disabled, and we're not, and that would have covered 80% of your insurance costs, and we're not going to cover it, and we want our money back. So he went to a lawyer. The lawyer said that they, in all probability, probably have a case, and that the best thing for him to do would be get as many credit cards as he could, max the credit cards out. Both him and his wife go buy a car, new cars on credit, and sell everything they have and cash it out and hide the cash and then declare bankruptcy. How's that?
A lawyer told him to do that.
And of course he would get out of this out of the $320,000 that this insurance company was trying to get out of him. Nice.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's one method. If you can fence the car. Can you tell me some what you said before about the lady with the disabled daughter and some of the things with your mom and. Those horror stories, you know, because I talk to people abroad, I live abroad, and they don't get it. Like, it's not a problem they have to deal with, you know, and I try and explain what Americans have to go through, and they just don't understand.
How much time you got?
Well, it's 3 a.m., so I'm not doing anything, so go ahead.
You're taping this?
Yeah, I'm going to record it, yeah.
Okay, good. Well, to start off with, my mother had a case of the shingles, My mother at the time was 93. She had a case of shingles, and it went into her right eye, and she got this viral infection in the back of her retina, and it threatened her eyesight. So we took her to the doctor. The doctor sent her to an eye doctor. The eye doctor said, you have to go immediately, or she might lose her eyesight, to Will's Eye Hospital in Philadelphia, which is about an hour drive from here. But as I don't drive, I'm no good in traffic, anyway, it cost me a couple of $100 to get her up there. Now, they already had the call that this was an emergency and had to be taken care of immediately. So within minutes after we got there, we sat down with the front desk. They said, the doctor called ahead of time, and yeah, we're familiar with the case. Just have a seat and we'll be right with you. 6 hours later, now according to the doctor, her vision is threatened, right? 6 hours later, we get in to see a doctor. The doctor says, I'll give you a prescription for steroids, antibiotic, and antiviral, and I can't understand why the doctor in Millville, which is 5 minutes from here, why he didn't do the same thing, because there's no necessity of really of having brought her up here, right? Mm-hmm. And all these drugs could have been initiated 6 or 7 hours prior to this, and it would have had a better chance of clearing up. 2 days into the medication, she starts hallucinating, and she's bedridden and sleeping 23 hours a day. So I figure, well, this is the end of the line. She's 93 and a half, and this is it. Her systems are starting to shut down. But I also felt that there's a good chance it was induced by the medication this guy at Will's Eye put her on, because of the rapid decline in only 2 days. Well, within 9 days, she had lost 10 pounds, and she was nearly comatose. Now, I'm freaking out and telling the doctors I think it's the medication. The pharmacist says no. The doctor says no. My primary says no. Fine. So I get my doctor to put her on the hospice care, which is a real nice service, but they'll only take you if you're imminently going to die within 6 months. So I figured she didn't have 6 or 8, 10 more days left. So the hospice comes in. Now, she runs through the series of medication, and within 2 days, she's up and walking around. Within 4 days, she gained 3 pounds back, and she's almost back to normal. So we go down to see the doctor, and the doctor says, oh, Ruth, you look so much better. I said, well, I guess so. I said, you damn near killed her with that freaking medication that you told me would have no effect on her. And he says, oh, I don't think it was that. And I said, well, I run through the case history. I said, why in the hell then, did she start hallucinating in 2 days, was comatose 23 hours a day, and then as soon as she's off the medication, she's up and running around. So I said, you people just will not admit that you may, that maybe that had something to do with it. But her eye's fine. All right. So what would you rather be dead and see, or blind in one eye and fine, right? I mean, that's what it almost comes down to. But her eye cleared up and she cleared up. So hospice, once she started getting better, then they gave us a notification. Well, they were real nice. The first day they brought a hospital bed in, because she had to be elevated so she wouldn't choke on her saliva and all. But you're not allowed to give her anything other than rudimentary care. So hospice was going to, because she was recovering, was going to pull out in the last week of September. Now, the second week of September, I was talking to my mother 1 minute, and I walked out to play with the dog, and I come back 5 minutes later, and she's unconscious on the back porch. So I call 911. Well, as soon as I called 911, then hospice is off the case because you're not supposed to bring in emergency care. You're supposed to just let her die. So you got the choice of letting your mother die on the back porch and risk losing hospice or calling. So I called them in, and I thought, well, I'm going to get 21 days in a nursing home because that's what Medicare allows you after a hospital stay. So I take my power of attorney, and I take my mother's living will and take that in and make sure they have copies of that with her chart before I let them do anything. And I said, before you do anything, call me. Next morning I call, because she was still in the emergency room. Next morning I call, and they said that your mother's in such and such a room. And I said, well, what have you done? They said, nothing, because we wanted to do a CAT scan, and we wanted to do an ultrasound on her carotid artery, and neither one, which are invasive, and both of which I would have approved. And she said, your mother said, no, she didn't want it, so we didn't give either test. Well, I said, well, it wasn't her. She didn't have the authority to say yes or no because she's been declared incompetent of those decisions, and you should have called me. So, but the hospitals now are all out to because Medicare has gotten so stingy with their dollars, and because they don't have the dollars in the first place, they've instituted all new rules. So I'm talking to the social worker, and she's going to get my mother into a care facility for 21 days, and then because I thought ahead and got the best AARP supplemental, that she would be entitled to 120 days after that in a nursing home at no cost. So we're all ready to go, and then the hospital calls and says, yeah, when are you picking your mother up? And I said, what the hell are you talking about? I said, she's supposed to go to a nursing home. And they said, no, we won't, we're not allowing it because Medicare doesn't allow it because of the fact that we didn't treat her. We just observed her. And I said, well, you did treat her because you changed her medication around. If that's not treating her, I don't know what the hell is. And the fact that you violated my rights by not calling me, because I would have okayed both of those tests, which would have meant you were treating her. But because Medicare's tight with her dollar in there and they've changed the rules, she didn't get either test, and I brought her home. Well, now hospice wants their bed back because they brought their bed in. And so I got to hunt up another organization that Medicare covers to bring in another bed. Hospice is nice enough to leave their bed there. Without their hospital bed, she would have died because she'd choke on her own saliva. But she had to be left at a 45-degree angle so that she would more or less swallow it and gravity take care of that problem. Meanwhile, I still have ladies coming in 11 hours a day watching her, so that there's somebody there all the time, and I'm there the rest of the day. Well, the other people bring their bed in. Now I got two beds. Now, Medicare is paying for both beds, but because if you're with hospice, the bill has to go through hospice, and when you're off of hospice, the bill has to go through these other people. So she's deteriorated rapidly, and so you're allowed to go back on hospice with a day's notice or 2 days, whatever, if she deteriorates and they think she's going to be dead again within 180 days. So they arrange for the nurse to come. She's supposed to come at 11:30, we'll say on a Tuesday. Well, she doesn't show up till 4 o'clock on a Wednesday. Meanwhile, I should have been out working and trying to make some money to pay for these ladies that are watching her. And we'll, at the end, we'll talk about the 78-year-old lady that was watching her has to work because of her. She has a daughter with medical problems. So, I lost my direction here. So the nurse shows up. Before the nurse even looks at my mother, she says she's not eligible to go back on Medicare or on hospice care So I said, well, what are you doing here? Why'd you even show up? She said, well, Medicare is responsible. In order for them to pay me, I got to show up. So I said, you haven't even looked at my mother. She's only 8 feet away in the next room. Why don't you go in and look at her? She says, it doesn't matter. I read the hospital report. I said, that was 3 days ago. Since then, she hasn't left bed. She hasn't eaten anything, and she can barely take any liquids in, let alone her medication. So the nurse looks at her and says, nope, she's not eligible, and she leaves. Well, now I'm freaking out. So then the hospice comes and grabs their bed. Now we only have one bed, which is what we should have because it's a small bedroom. It had another twin bed in there this whole time. Then my mother takes another turn for the worse, and I call my primary up, and I won't use his last name. I said, George, she has to have something because she's in agony, and she's moaning the whole time. He says, I said, we got to put her on morphine. And he says, only hospice can put her on morphine. Now, I'm saying, well, then you got to bring them in, and you got to bring a different nurse here, because it's just ridiculous. You can't. That nurse didn't even look at her and turned her down last time. He said, we'll send a different nurse. So the social worker comes first, and her and the nurse are supposed to arrive the same time. But the social worker, me and her, are talking, and she's saying, well, we'll start filling out the paper. Well, it's like an hour and a half paperwork, even though they have all the questions they already have the answers to because of the fact that I've only been off of hospice care for less than a week now. So I said, when the nurse comes, don't say anything to her, but if the nurse says she's not going on morphine, then I'm not filling out anything. We'd be wasting each other's time. So the nurse shows up. She takes one look at my mother, and she comes out, and I said, I just one question. Is she going on morphine? And she said, yeah. She says, and right away. So we put her on morphine. She said, you'll see the difference within moments. Hour later, my mother hasn't changed a bit. The morphine has made no effect on her at all. So we call the doctor up. The primary says, well, instead of giving it to her every 4 hours, give it to her every hour. Okay, fine. So now hospice says we have to bring our bed back, right?
Jeez.
So it's like musical chairs with beds. So now hospice comes in with their bed. So now we got two beds there. So I talked to the guy from hospice, I slipped him $20, and he took the other bed, disassembled it, and got that out of the way. So we moved that out in the living room, so we didn't have that in there. But we're still, both the beds are still being paid for, two beds at a time by Medicare, even though I didn't have to lay out a cent for either one. But Medicare had to pay for two separate beds for the time the duplicate beds were there. Now, the nurse, the doctor says, give her every hour. So 3 hours before, we couldn't give her morphine. Now he wants to quadruple the amount of morphine we're giving her, which was fine with me at this stage in the game. She was in constant pain and just doing nothing but moaning. So after the second shot, then she calms down some. Well, I was afraid we're going to run out of morphine, and now she hasn't eaten anything in like 7 or 8 days. She has barely drunk maybe a couple of tablespoons of water, and that's all she can drink without choking on it. So she hasn't had anything to drink either, and no medication except the morphine, which you put in with a little turkey baster between her cheek and her tongue, and it's absorbed that way. So I'm afraid of running out of morphine. So they order overnight. They order more morphine to be delivered. And it comes early the next morning, the morphine's there. And the new nurse, this is the third nurse now, she shows up to take a look at my mother. And she's telling me, oh, your mother's heart's got a real strong heart. She feels her feet and all, and puts this what's that, stethoscope or whatever on her feet, and says she's got good circulation in her feet and she could go on for a long time. I asked her how long, you know, being she hadn't eaten and hadn't drunk anything basically in over a week. So the guy had left a suction to put down her throat and suck the fluid out, but I'm not legally allowed to do that. The nurse has to do it. So I asked the nurse to do it, and she says, well, we don't do it that way. We roll them over and pat them on the back, and that's the way, and keep rolling them from side to side. So this is all within 2 minutes after she'd already checked her heart and said she's in, her heart's strong. She rolls her on her side. Now, fortunate for me, my niece and her husband and the nurse and me are in the room. She rolls her on her side, and I just look at my mother and I said, she just died. And the nurse says, oh, don't be silly, she's fine. I said, she just died, Jesus, you know. She said, no, she's fine. I said, take your fucking stethoscope, put it on her and tell me she's fine. Well, she put the stethoscope on and she had died, right? So maybe 20 seconds go by and my mother does one of these, like that, which I didn't know was a breathing reflex and totally threw me off. Well, she does it like two more times. And then I just said, well, I gotta leave the room. And my niece and nephew and the nurse stayed there. So then they have to call what I term the death nurse in to verify she's dead, even though the nurse was there with the stethoscope on her, saying her heart stopped beating. And by the time the other nurse shows up, it's like an hour later, and her heart hadn't beaten since then, so she's pretty much dead. Now, they have two boxes now of morphine. The boxes are each sealed, and inside each box is a jar, and both the jars are sealed. So now they go into my mother's bedroom, they come out with an unused diaper, and they open the boxes and they dump the morphine out. I said, what the hell are you doing? You know, and they said, well, we're not allowed to carry morphine around with us. If we got stopped by the cops, we could be arrested. I said, well, it's ridiculous because both boxes were sealed, and inside the box, both jars are sealed. So it would be impossible to mistake and think that this material had been broken into. Now, they should, each hospice should have a nurse that's designated to pick this stuff up instead of throw it away. I don't know how, you know, I don't know how much morphine is, so but I can imagine it's not cheap. And we had 84 lorazepam pills, which are supposed to ease your stress. And they put hot water in the bottle of them and shook it up and then dumped them in the diaper. So that was that. They come the following day, picked her bed up for the last time, and the death nurse signed off on it, and then because she signed off on it, then the doctor, he automatically has his signature applied to the death certificate, and that was that. But it seemed crazy to me, the duplication, not only the wasting of the pills, but the duplication with these stupid beds. So one time, on two different occasions, there are two beds there that Medicare was paying for both beds. How unnecessary. And if you had one payer, none of that would have happened.
Yeah, and the wasted drugs and everything else. And probably, you know, the reason the doctor in the beginning that wouldn't admit he was wrong about the eye problems, because if you admit you're wrong, you might get sued, or, you know, and
sure. Yeah.
It's the tort thing. So.
But to wait 8 more hours to have her get her first treatment for her eye when you're telling us it's an absolute emergency and you got to rush to Will's eye, and there were only two people ahead of us, so it took them 6 hours to look at her with two people ahead of us in Will's eye. Listen, unless your eye's sitting on your cheek down next, you know, down next to your lip, I guess you don't get immediate service. But that that part was crazy. Although the doctor said that that we were supposed to go back to Will's Eye, and I said, I'm not going back up there just to have them say the treatment's worked or you know. And I said, so we'll go back to the doctor and let him look at it because he's the one that first looked at it. Well, I get a call from the nurse saying the doctor won't look at your mother because he wasn't the primary, because he was the second choice from my primary physician, called another eye doctor before he called him. And I said, I don't give a shit if he was a second choice or not. He's the first one eye doctor that looked at my mother. So he's the doctor of record.
Jeez.
So 15, I said, we're coming down there, whether you like it or not. And about 10 minutes later, 15 minutes maybe, the doctor calls me. And he says, you can't bring your mother down because and I said, like it or not, I said, we're on our way and we're coming down to see you. And you're going to look at her because you're the one that took the first look at her eye and said she had to go to Will's Eye. So he did. He took us in. Now, this other lady, one of the ladies that I had watching my mother, I had a 75-year-old and two 78-year-olds. The one 78-year-old that worked for hospice, she wasn't supposed to work for me besides hospice, but she was nice enough to come back in the evening and take care of my mother for a couple more hours, because basically she needed the money. Now, her daughter is 49 years old. Her daughter was born mentally retarded to the point where she can't even chew. She has to have mush fed to her. And literally, this poor lady for 49 years has to literally put her fingers up this poor girl's anus and pull the crap out. That's how retarded this person is. Now, because of that, she's on SSI. Now, SSI wouldn't allow the mother to have anything in her name that was worth more than $2,000. So she literally couldn't put any money in the bank and that went over $2,000, or she'd lose her SSI. She couldn't have the house in her name. She couldn't have her car in her name. She could have nothing. So she had to watch out where she had her direct deposit Social Security check to make sure that it never ran never ran up to 3 months where it would be over $2,000 in the account. So the daughter would be taken care of during the day. She went to they would pick her up and take her to some facility. But the mother at 78 was still working, and she had to watch out that she didn't have anything that would add up, the accumulation of which would add up to being worth $2,000. Now, how crazy is that?
How could they stipulate something like that?
It's SSI. If you're on it, you can be worth nothing, or else you can't get on it. It's like like dialysis. Years ago, they thought she would be close to being on dialysis, and the kidney doctor said, we'd like to do a test on her, a dye test. And I said, yeah, but that's the worst thing for kidneys. And he said, well, yeah, but it'll tell us how close she is to needing dialysis, but she might need dialysis after the test. I said, after she needs dialysis, then you do the fucking test. I said, why in the world would I risk putting my mother on dialysis so you could determine she has no kidney function? Because the dye destroyed the last bit of kidney function she had. And that was 10 years ago. 10 years ago. So I pulled her off of that doctor in a hurry. Absolutely crazy. And then the other doctor wanted to give her a stress test. Now, they don't give them to people that old. They don't make you, walk a treadmill or anything. They distress your heart chemically, right? So I said, listen, if her heart is in, they said she had congenitive heart failure for the last 10 years. I said, if her heart's in that bad a position, fuck the stress test. You know, when it gives out, it gives out. I'm not going to allow you. She had a friend that died on a stress test. That was one of the reasons she didn't want it. And one of the reasons I didn't want it is she would walk up and down the cellar stairs and never had any heart problems. So I said, no, she's not getting a stress test. But that's where the money's at, testing. So
Absolutely. Pushing tests on the elderly, saying, you need this, you need this, pay us. And, you know, it's hard to argue with doctors for a lot of people. You want to trust them.
The doctor said, I'm going to rate you down for blood test for vitamin D. So I said, all right, because my blood test has always been covered. Well, this wasn't covered. They wanted $215 after the fact to determine that, yeah, I should have one supplemental case of vitamin D. Now, the pills for the vitamin D cost $7, all right? Mm-hmm. Now, they can do you no harm because if you have too much vitamin D, you piss it out. Now, for $7, if you have somebody that you might think, and you only need one regimen of it, that you might think might be shy of vitamin D and it can't hurt you, give them a fucking $7 prescription. Why give them a $215 test to give them a $7 prescription when the prescription can't hurt them?
Well, because they can't, they want to make the $250.
Right.
And why is the test $250? Like, what does it involve that costs so much?
I don't know, because
How can the cost of procedures be that high for, you know, to do what? Look at your blood or something? Like,
There's like 20 different things. They look at my blood, but 19 of them were covered by my insurance, and the vitamin D wasn't covered. So I haven't been back to get blood tested. I owe these people $215, and I called the doctor, and the doctor said, we'll write you a prescription for it, and that'll cover it. Well, it sure didn't cover it, and so next time I get blood tested, I got to pay the $215 or go to somebody else to get it tested.
So that makes people not want to go get care. Like, when they might need it. Like, well, I don't want to pay all that. You know, that's why medical expenses are the number one cause of bankruptcy in the U.S. right now. More than housing, more than anything. It's paying for their health care. It's crazy.
And Obamacare is not going to do anything, because people that aren't sick, why should they sign up and have to pay when they can wait till they do get sick, because pre-existing conditions
are gone? Exactly. And you just say, well, I'll just wait till I get sick before I pay, and the penalty for not doing the mandatory insurance is less than what it costs to buy it. And really, it really doesn't matter how much you play around with the ratio, how much is paid out of pocket versus how much is paid out of taxes, when the biggest problem is the cost of procedures are too high. And the cost of procedures are too high because they have a bunch of protectionist government regulations that say things like Medicare can't negotiate down the price of drugs with Big Pharma. Or, you know, hospitals, you have like only one option to get certain equipment and stuff like that. They just charge whatever they want. And it's because of government. And now the government wants to mandate people to buy insurance, and you can only buy it from your own regional areas and stuff. So insurance companies are just going to charge you more. The government might give you a subsidy, but you don't get it till the end of the year, which, of course, means you got to pay for the next year's too, and you don't get that subsidy till the end of the year. So you're basically giving them an interest-free loan every year for something that's subsidized, but also the price increase too, and you end up paying more than you had before. I couldn't think of a dumber system what we have now other than Obamacare.
Yeah, well, it's because no one had the balls to have a one-payer at pharmaceutical. Yeah. That was they all hailed Bush for the pharmaceutical bill, but the pharmaceutical companies wrote the bill.
Yeah. Yep, and that's the bill in 2003 that, you know, got rid of price negotiations. And everyone else, Europe and Asia and South America and so on, everybody that has some form of universal health care, they all actively go and negotiate down the prices. And if you don't do that, if the total cost doesn't come down, it doesn't matter if you pay out of pocket or taxes.
Yeah, Americans are subsidizing everybody's pharmaceutical bill in the world.
Yep. And the more you do that, the higher the price will be. And then the ones who do have to pay, it's going to be an extraordinary bill. And I mean, we have $100,000 to $200,000 hospital bills. It's crazy. It's more than a nice house.
Our bill usually ran, my mother had two small strokes, both of which she recovered from before she got out of the ambulance, and both of which they kept her in the hospital for 6 days, and each time the room, and she wasn't on a constant monitor to a nurse's station or anything, was ran an average of $10,000 a day.
Wow.
You'd like to run a hotel and charge half of that?
I like just $10,000 at all. That's amazing. It's disgusting. And how is it not a voting issue? You know, is it because it's too complicated for most people? Or because I think a lot of people don't have to deal with it until they get older, until they get real sick or get in a car accident or something, you know. But they talk about gay marriage and this stuff that, whatever, you know, like, it's just not that important in the list of things that are affecting people's daily life, you know.
What's gay marriage in Japan? Do they allow?
I don't even know. Probably. Like, it's not, it's like nobody talks about that kind of thing. Like, homosexuality here is not a, it's nothing, it's like, whatever, it's like being left-handed or something. No one notices or gives a damn.
The, I just read an article in The Economist that they finally decided to crack down on the gangs that legally extort people for protection.
Yeah.
Man, now, how many centuries has that taken?
Well, the Yakuza and the government are very close together, you know. And it's because post-World War II, the Mafia got so much support from the CIA that they're really official in most places. I mean, there are areas of Kobe and stuff where it's like, yep, there goes some Yamaguchi Gumi and their Ferraris or whatever. You just know they're there.
So surprising was the fact that, yeah, it's everybody knows it, you know,
I mean, we had some cities in the U.S. like that where everyone knew, like, some mobsters were well-known, you know, like, Luciano was, like, living in a hotel with FBI agents and stuff, but the thing is, our mob, that's not ours, I ain't even Japanese, but the mob over here is different. They're like, they give a lot back, because they know they have to kind of have to pay the area they hang in to be tolerated, you know? So they're making all this money with whatever, the gambling and hookers and drugs and all the mob stuff, but they dump a lot of money back into the community. So people just go, oh yeah, it's a so-and-so, who cares? They sort of like bought everybody off. And yeah, they're weird. Like, they were the first ones to go to Fukushima and were delivering rice and everything else. Like, even the mob was there doing it. Because what they're really after is they wanted to go into all those empty convenience stores and stuff and rob the ATM machines, which they did. Because they evacuated the whole area in Fukushima, right? And no one's allowed back in. Well, the mob went in there, suits and stuff, and no one's there, right? So they just physically broke in the machines and took the paper cash. And this is a very cash society, you know? Not much credit in Japan, that they don't understand that. Like, why would I buy something I don't have the money for? You know, like, they don't get that.
Here's an interesting side point. Last week, the first cash to Bitcoin ATM machine opened in this country.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Now, how crazy is that? With bitcoins, I've seen them drop 50% in 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. What the, you know, I mean, how crazy is that?
I guess, you know, somebody has money to burn and can risk it, because it can go up 50% in 20 minutes too, so.
Oh, here's just a quick story. I have a friend in Canada. Now, I think bitcoins is a joke myself, but apparently it's a well-sponsored, you know, there's a lot of them out there, and there's a lot of companies now that'll accept trade in Bitcoin.
Tell me about Taiwan, because that's what you're saying is the best. Why is it better?
7 years ago, Taiwan looked into how to provide health care. Now, they provide, it costs them 7% of their gross domestic product. We're up to 16.9%, and there's no country within 5% points of us. And we're something like 24th or something as far as longevity goes. But anyway, they come up with a system, cradle to grave everything, one payer for everybody. That takes care of glasses, nose, eye, throat, you name it, it's covered. The doctors, they did away with malpractice insurance, and they did away with doctors paying to go to school. Now, the doctors required, I don't know if it's 3 or 4 years, to go out in some of the boonies out in Taiwan and provide medical service. Now, I don't know what their compensation is, but it doesn't seem to have hurt the number of doctors in Taiwan. So without malpractice insurance and one payer, then you reduce probably the biggest single
bill. No college debt.
Of a doctor. Yeah, well, no college debt. That would have been the highest bill. But then the reoccurring bill would be the malpractice insurance. And then the other reoccurring bill is the 3 or 4 people you have to have in your office just to deal with a multiplicity of insurance companies. So by having one payer, you don't have to deal with that. And then all information is accessible to all doctors because you have one payer. So they have the best system, it seems. I mean, they provide the most care, and only at about 30% of what it costs America to provide lesser care, and still we have 40 million people without any insurance at all. They have no one without insurance.
And people being driven into bankruptcy because of their medical costs.
And the same thing with the pharmaceuticals. They do it the same way as Canada. They negotiate with the company, the company has to provide the information, give the company a decent profit, and say that's what we're paying you.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely systems out there that could be copied, but politics is not going to allow it.
We used to allow, in New Jersey, utility company was allowed to make 13% profit on their investment. So over here at Salem 1 and 2, the original estimate was $450 million. It ended up costing $1.4 billion, but the utility company didn't care because they were allowed 13% on their investment. So they didn't give a shit what the cost of building the place was.
Yeah, the more the merrier for them.
Right. All right, I'll let you go to bed.
No, I like this. I mean, this is exactly what I wanted to show people, and I hope I can talk to some more people about their healthcare horror stories, and just put them all up for everyone to listen to. Because especially people who aren't from the United States, they just don't understand. Like, it's easy to find a horror story, you know. It's about everybody that's been in the hospital has one.
Oh, every family has a horror story. And now, like, I got to go in for a colon scope, which I, you're supposed to go in every 5 years. The first time I went in, they found 2 cancerous polyps, and they removed them and never had any trouble with them. And then I went in 5 years later, and they found 2 more that weren't cancerous and removed them. And so they said, come back in 5 years. And I said, well, I'll come back in 3 years, you know, because that is covered by my insurance. So one for the good guys, I guess. Now, here's what the point I was going to make. You have to sign an agreement. Now, they want them, you're in a semi-conscious state here. You're not knocked out with a gas, but you're knocked out with chemicals in your bloodstream. Now, the first two, I said, no, I want to be awake when it's going on because I want to see what the hell my insides are all about. And they objected, but they let me. Well, this time, now they don't let you anymore. And I said, well, you know, I mean, they take pictures and all, but I said, you know, they don't want the patient asking questions during the procedures, what it comes down to. So I guess I'll get knocked out for this one. All right. Well,
great stuff, man.